Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me, we have a full house tonight. We got Aaron O'Brien, we got Holly Michelle Vine, and we've got Robbie Palmer staying with us for longer than a segment.
Is this where I can howl?
Yes.
Woo-woo! Was that a wolf howl, or is that sort of just a...
That was like a...
That was a juggalo.
That was... It was not a juggalo.
No, it was like a werewolf bar mitzvah howl.
Wow, werewolf bar mitzvah.
Yes.
So, Robbie, nice. Just in case anybody missed you, the last two shows when you were on, you're doing your 31 days.
Of, 31 vlogs of Halloween.
On your Nerdynomicon channel.
He's still doing them.
YouTube.com/Nerdynomicon.
Yes, and you guys just did a live stream.
We did. We talked about the amazing movie that should be on everyone's watch list.
This
and
is
Christmas
a movie.
List.
That's right. This is a movie that everybody should see at least once. It was fantastically made for a certain audience, and it's called Truth or Dare.
It's fantastically made for people who are blind and dumb.
It's not good.
No?
It's
awful.
Really, really not good.
Awful film.
It's about a possessed game of Truth or Dare.
That's awesome.
In concept, yes. I totally agree with you. In execution, oh God, why?
Sounds like sexy.
It could be.
It should have been.
Really should have been.
There's not a boob to be found in the entire movie.
Nope, there's not.
In a movie called Truth or Dare, you expect it to be like
when you were 15, 16 playing Truth or Dare, you wanted something sexy to happen so bad and never happened.
And it still doesn't happen.
It still doesn't happen.
In a rated R movie, it still doesn't happen. It's still there is a lesbian kiss. I mean, that's as sexy as it gets. 5 minutes into the film.
They also have a rule in there, two truths and a dare, which I'm like,
that's not
first off, who are you playing with when they're doing that? Yeah. Secondly, what kind of truths are you using? Because I use that shit like Tyrion fucking Lannister, okay?
Yeah.
I'm in there. I'm going to find your secret, and I'm going to use that to sleep with you.
Wow.
Wait, what?
I'm never playing Truth or Dare with you.
I said sleep with, not bang on a gaming table. I like to be spooned.
Okay.
Sometimes I need to be the little spoon.
Doesn't everyone, though?
This is why
everybody does.
This is why he hits on me, because I'm a large guy.
And thank you, Holly. She's over there trying to bring some normalcy. Doesn't everybody need to feel be the little spoon every once in a while? We just need to feel that love.
Holly is very little, though.
Yes.
You do, though. No, like, even, like, so you're sitting at your computer, and you're droning on, and you're just working really hard.
Right.
And you're just, like, you're drained, and you're exhausted, and then your loved one comes up behind you and gives you a hug. That just feels so nice.
I agree, but typically, I'm not only just the big spoon, I'm the fucking ladle. Okay, there's no teaspoons to be had in my
life. Of clay.
Nice.
Well, even the ladle has a place on the stove in its cute little no drip thing. So, right.
First off, my kitchen is not laid out the same way you do, and secondly, in the visual that I have, I'm hanging upside down, dripping. Okay, that is not something. Although oddly, in keeping with today's topic. Strangely,
it works.
It works.
It works very well.
Well, and
I would like to see Holly be the big spoon, though. I think that would be hilarious.
She'd have to have a very small person.
I want to see your big spoon.
So, talking about our subject, we are talking about the 1997 movie Event Horizon.
Aaron's just looking for any way to just get this conversation.
let it die.
Let it die now.
I'll never drink tea again.
Yes.
We didn't have much Star Trek news, though. We did get a picture of Laurel with hair and a dress with a Klingon symbol on her big gold belt.
Yes.
She got some plastic surgery.
I thought you were going to say something else.
Big
gold. Her big gold cod piece. But, you know, the Klingon cod. It's a double cod piece because Klingon's got two.
Yeah. Well, it was. And she's got hair, so I'm sure that will get thrown in a line or two. They have to throw it. If they don't address the hair with the Klingons.
I really. They're probably not going to. Discovery.
Are Klingons really the kind of people who are going to actually conversate about that?
Well, they ask Worf during the
Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah, in the Deep Space Nine, he goes, why does everyone look different? He goes, we don't talk about that. But
we don't discuss it with outsiders, I think.
But they should at least throw the hair as a comment. If they don't, they take themselves way too seriously.
Well, the thing is also, like, I don't see there being a big time gap. So how did they go from bald to, like, she's got a full head of hair.
It's
like,
the future,
long.
Dave. Oh. Anything can happen.
Rogaine. Klingon game. We should add that to one of our commercials for the
That's
Alex
a good
Jones
idea.
Show.
Klingon
Rogaine. Klingon hair Rogaine.
Yes.
For regrowing the warrior inside of you.
That would be hilarious.
Maybe she's born with it.
Maybe it's Klingon game. But the thing is, I want to reach out to the Klingon Language Institute and get them to translate it for me. And then I want to reach out to Jen and see if she can record it in Klingon. And then we'll read the translations in English.
Oh, yeah. She could sing you a jingle.
You know what you guys should do on the Synthaholics YouTube channel is do, like, commercials in Klingon. Like that Maybelline commercial, just do it in Klingon. Have Duncan in full Klingon face.
Or you can just have me without a shirt making fart noises under my armpit. And that's it.
That's always fun.
I kind of get the feeling that you'd get a lot of views.
Nah. Not the right kind of views.
How would you feel if that went viral, though?
That'd
for
be
all the wrong reasons.
It'll go viral for the the people, the streakers community.
Yeah. I didn't say it was going to be naked.
But because it's going to follow up your naked running through the woods video.
He's got socks on, David. He's not naked.
Not naked.
He can't make bacon right now, but naked he is not.
So much male nudity. It's not even funny.
Sorry, I'll put my pants back on.
Should we get into Event Horizon?
Yes, we should.
If we have to.
That's a great idea.
Holly's like, moving on.
No more. I was in your corner, Palmer, but now you're on your own.
All right. So, so Event Horizon was released on August 15th, 1997. It was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson.
And for those of you who don't know, he directed all the Resident Evil films with his wife.
Yeah.
Which are the better of the video
they're
game
watchable.
Movies.
They're watchable
for video game movies. Yeah, so, I mean, he's a decent director.
And for the record, I also want to point out that he sifted through over 40 scripts before he got to this one as well.
He
was in high demand.
Yeah, because he did Mortal Kombat.
Yes, and that is exactly why.
And Mortal Kombat was also one of the more watchable ones.
And it was very, they were extremely, you were saying, he got a lot of offers.
Yes.
And he went for this one.
Well, the reason being is almost everything else that he had was PG-13 and below. And he specifically stated that he wanted to do a hard R movie. And when he stumbled across this script, there were like three or four others that were in the running, but he stumbled across this script, and I believe the original working title was something akin to My Destination is the Star, or My Destination is the Stars, or something like that.
The Destination, the Stars, or something.
Right, right. So he selected this. I mean, he went deep to find this script.
And so the script is written by a man named Philip Eisner. We were saying before we started recording that although he's got a couple other credits, there's very little he's done. Where most people who's written scripts, you would have at least seen.
Well, the thing is, I give huge props to Paul W.S. Anderson for this, because, like, usually, and we talked with Kipley about this, people who write brilliant scripts and original things, they get forgotten. And they're just, like, everyone in Hollywood just wants the next big remake or whatever.
Sure.
So this is its own thing. It's its own franchise. It's just its own individual film.
Right.
And the fact that he went searching through all these scripts is absolutely amazing. And props to him for looking for something different and not just another remake or same old thing.
And the thing is, the script name was even changed to distance itself even further from movies like Alien and stuff like that. They wanted to completely remove any correlation between those sci-fi movies and those franchises and Event Horizon.
Yeah.
Hence the change in title.
And so many genre actors in this film.
Oh, God, yes.
So many great people that, like, I recognize from things. It's great.
Well, and, you know, just before, a lot of them really got super popular. And besides, what's his name?
Lawrence Fishburne?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is pre-Matrix.
Pre-Matrix. But Sam Neill,
this is post-Jurassic Park, but pre-Matrix.
But the thing is, like, I don't know anything Sam Neill's done lately. I mean, he was in The Tudors, but he died in the first season. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Sam Neill hasn't been in much.
I actually completely forgot about that.
It's weird that Sam Neill, it's like, all these big names, and Samuel's one of them, but his career kind of declined, and everyone else is kind
of
rose.
Well, a lot of those guys, too, want to do other things than just do movies. Like, they want to do Broadway shows.
Yeah, Julie Richardson especially. She's more like Broadway stage stuff after Nip Tuck.
And this movie did terrible in the box office. The budget was $60 million, and it brought in $26.7 million.
That was less than I thought.
Not even a third of what it should have got. It's under a third. It was like a huge disaster.
Movie's ahead of its time, though. I mean, it's a way better film than those numbers.
Well, there's a lot of factors, and I'm sure we're going to get to them in this episode. But there's a lot of factors that led to the version that we've all seen as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, there's a bunch of deleted scenes that are like missing now and stuff like.
Well, the original cut of the movie was 136 minutes.
Mm. Yeah.
So, that's not the version we saw.
No.
Sure. Yeah. So, we'll get into the actual synopsis of this film. So, we're in the future. We're in the year 2047. And they had this Event Horizon ship was lost in space. And it was one of the worst
catastrophes ever.
It was the worst sound I ever heard. Like Wasn't a dump truck being... Sorry. Launched off the Empire State Building.
And dumping lots of dung into a nice car.
It was a Pee-wee Herman reference, but nobody got it. Never mind.
I'm kind of on track here. My brain is like, I think it wasn't like a lost in space. It was like, they told people that it blew up.
Yeah, they did.
Right?
Yeah, they did. They said okay. It was
lost.
It was destroyed, whatever. But it was basically, it was one of the worst shipping space
catastrophes on record.
Right.
Because apparently space got way better after 2015.
Yeah, man. So cool.
Hashtag Space Force.
Space Force.
So important.
The ship reappears in a orbit in Neptune, and they're out to retrieve it. We get introduced to Dr. William Weir, who's the Sam Neill of Jurassic Park fame. And he was the guy who designed it. And we get this quick beginning where he's up in some space station and he's shaving with a straight razor. That's not a good idea.
No.
Not when you're psychotic and your wife has committed suicide.
Yeah. It's like
with the same straight razor.
With the same straight razor. It's like, she's like, I'm just going to keep using this.
I'm going to remember her every single time I nick myself.
Sentimental reasons.
Yes. So morbid.
Loving you.
Sorry.
That's terrifying. No! Don't ever do that again.
No.
All right, so... So he's called to the ship, and it's the rescue ship is called the Lewis and Clark, and commanded by Captain Miller, which is Lawrence Fishburne, and they're on the secret mission, and Dr. Weir's coming along. So you got this wacky crew. You kind of have like the Aliens kind of feel before they go into the
Yeah, that's exactly the same parallel that I had in my head was Aliens, the sequel. How you kind of seeing the crew assemble.
When Ripley goes to meet everyone, and you're like, oh, you were just a bunch of knuckleheads.
Mm-hmm.
You're all going to die.
Right.
Especially Cooper.
Yeah.
He's the big knucklehead.
Game over, man. Game over.
I know, right?
Oh, God, I miss him.
We talked about him last week.
We did just talk about him last week. We did talk about him last week.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah. So the crew, they meet the whole crew, and they go into a stasis, which is like these water tanks, because apparently when they go into full acceleration, that they just completely be liquefied. So if you put them in liquid, they won't be liquefied.
Because you can't compress liquid.
And there you go. I don't know if that really works, but...
Space, the final frontier.
There you go.
These are the voyages of the Lewis and Clark.
So they
along
go...
Along with the Captain Lorca. Except he's the doctor.
I blame it on nanobots.
Nanobots. They all go to sleep in the water tanks, and during that time, Dr. Weir wakes up, and he finds his wife, Claire, is there, and she's missing her eyes.
And her clothes.
And her clothes. And
on
she's
the bridge.
Like, I've been waiting for you. And you're like,
could you imagine, like,
look into my eyes,
auditioning for that role? Like, yeah, you're gonna be naked the whole movie.
I know, wasn't it weird?
Yeah, so weird. Like, I think the robe was the only thing she actually wore the entire movie.
If you think
if
you think that one's weird, I've got a better one for you. Life Force.
Oh, yeah. I saw Life Force.
1980s sci-fi vampire-ish movie. Yeah. I don't think she wears a stitch of clothes in the entire movie, does she?
I it's been a long time since I've seen it, but
It's been over 10 years for me, too, and I'm like, this movie is bad, even with all the blatant, unnecessary nudity.
Nudity, I know. Exactly.
It's like, I'm not even aroused anymore. I'm just ashamed. I'm just like,
ugh. I feel dirty.
So she's... Obviously, like I said, she has no eyes, and its whole thing's kind of disturbing. And that's when all of a sudden he wakes up again, and it's like this—he had this vivid nightmare that he was living through. And they're like, "What's the matter, Doc?" And then he gets shot, or no, that was before.
Lorca shots him in the neck.
Lorca.
His name is DJ. I'm sorry.
DJ, play us a song. Anyways, the crew...
He's the smoking doctor. He's like a doctor from the 50s or 60s. I know. He just keeps smoking. It's great. I like how the doctors went back to cigarettes in the future.
I know.
Like, oh, cigarettes don't kill you. Cancer kills you.
So apparently the crew of the Lewis and Clark were supposed to be on leave, and...
They are not on leave anymore.
They got, because of this top secret mission, they were called in to rescue the Event Horizon. So once they hear that it's the Event Horizon, and Dr. Weir is kind of giving them the rundown of what the Event Horizon is, they don't want to have anything to do with it because they're sort of like
they're freaked out. And also ships that go up this far usually don't come back.
Yeah, this is really far out. And they were told, I mean, like I think somebody mentioned before, I think it was Holly mentioned before, that everyone was told that it was destroyed. And so they're like,
it's a ghost ship.
Yeah. They're like, fuck you.
Space.
Right.
Bullshit. Bullshit, mama.
So they were all kind of spooked. And then Dr. Weir has to explain what the secret experimental side of the ship it was that has a gravity drive.
And that part was pretty funny.
And it's funny because they kind of do the thing in Stranger Things with a paper poking the hole.
And they do the same thing in Interstellar.
Yeah, yeah.
But this was the first time I've ever seen that before.
Oh, yeah, I mean, back in 97 or whatever.
It was the first time I'd seen that explained that way.
Right.
But it's funny because when they...
he uses the girl's picture.
Yeah, he puts it through the picture, yeah.
That's Susan and she's mine.
That's Susan and she's mine.
Or whatever her name was.
Yeah, it was great. And that was Sean Pertwee. Who's plays Smith, and Sean Pertwee is also Alfred in Gotham.
Oh, is he? Oh,
yeah.
The whole time I was watching
the movie, I'm like, I know who he is. Who is he? But he's just so young there. I couldn't figure it out until the movie was over. I'm like,
homeboy's Alfred Pennyworth.
He's Alfred Pennyworth from Gotham. Dude. There's so many genre actors in this movie. Which
there really
so
is, and that's a great rendition of Alfred, by the way, in Gotham.
I love him. Yeah,
I haven't watched.
I actually haven't watched Gotham.
It took me a little while to get into, but let me put it to you this way. This Alfred is ex-Special Forces, mm-hmm. and he's one of the ones that teaches Bruce Wayne how to be Batman.
How to fight.
It's pretty awesome.
It sounds like cool. I just wish I liked the old English butler. Yes, sir.
An old English butler.
I'm Michael Caine.
See, I'm fine with Michael Caine. I'm fine with Homeboy. Who is it? Armand Asante? No, it's not Armand Asante. The new one.
I don't know, Michael Caine?
Michael Caine.
I can't take your guys' Michael Caine impressions. I love Michael Caine.
He loves it when I do Michael Caine.
I love Michael Caine.
I still love the foreshadowing Dark Knight. You've known her whole life. Not yet, sir. Dude.
That's cold.
Anyway, sorry.
So the Event Horizon on its test flight was supposed to reach Proxima Centauri, which are our closest star system, and left and never came back. And once they took off, there was a recording, and it was basically a bunch of screaming and
some Latin
thrown in. Apparently, that
figures it out.
Yeah.
Mirror Universe characters are fluent in Latin.
Which Heath, Jason Isaacs' character, a DJ, he thinks that it says "save me" or "liberate me." So
liberate me, save me.
Yeah.
Which he finds out it means there's more to it later on. But
yes, he the later the movie, the longer the movie goes, the more Latin he can hear. I wonder if that's what the ship's doing to him. It's like bringing back his Latin classes.
He's like, he's breaking out yellow books.
Can I say something about the Latin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is 2047. And
who speaks
this
Latin?
Guy knows Latin? No. Like, there are so few people in 2018 who speak Latin, let alone can read it. I mean,
It's only 30 years in the future. I mean, anything could happen,
from
right?
From now. But
maybe he went to a classical school. Classical schools, like Christian schools and homeschool, they teach Latin. I mean, I was
that's
Latin.
True. And in, that's true. If you're a doctor,
I was
there's
homeschooled.
A,
I didn't learn Latin.
There's a ton of... No, but if you're a doctor, there's a ton of Latin you have to learn just for...
And he is a doctor.
Law school as well.
Like medical terminologies and stuff. Yeah.
Anatomy and bullshit like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's not like Sanskrit died in 20 years.
Yeah.
But it could.
So they like I said, they get to Neptune, and they try to contact the Event Horizon, but they get no response. They fly to it, and they dock with it, which is actually...
That's not a load-bearing structure.
It is now.
It is now.
Fuck you.
Such a great line.
Oh, my God. My favorite fuck you line was the fuck this ship.
Fuck this ship.
However, I think it pissed off the ship.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think the ship was pissed off before they met it.
Oh, this ship needed a nap.
It needed a nap.
Didn't it have a really long nap before it came back?
I don't know. It's like just an angry beehive out in space. That's basically all it is.
I also think it's interesting that it came back around Neptune and not Pluto.
Yeah.
Because Pluto wasn't declared not a planet till later, but it's like it's interesting that they kind of like foreshadowed that and didn't even talk about Pluto and just like, let's do Neptune.
Also, I thought it was interesting they didn't go to Uranus because that would have been kind of funnier.
Samuel took his wife to Uranus. Yes, right up there.
He's just great. Mm. He's just be funny. His jokes would just write themselves.
Exactly. She's nice.
So
just how I like it. Two anuses in her face.
All right. So Captain Miller and their engineer, the medical tech Peters, go aboard the Event Horizon, and they are looking for survivors. Apparently, they're seeing that there's
life signs on board, but they can't find anything.
Find out what's going on. So mm-hmm.
They can't pinpoint where the life signs are.
They're the spirits of the demons.
The demons. The ship of the damned. So
the ship of the dead.
The corridor they find is lined with explosives and emergency measures. This is foreshadowing people. This means that if there's a catastrophe, they can blow the middle section of the ship. So like a D7.
Yeah, it's sort of.
Like a Klingon D7.
Because the front half is like the bridge, and it's got a long neck, and it's got basically a drive section, maybe, which is exactly how a D7 is set up.
Maybe Klingons have that too.
Yeah, Klingons invented the Event Horizon.
There you go.
Samuel didn't really do it. He stole it.
That's right. So they split up. One person goes to the bridge, and they discover mutilated and frozen human corpses floating around with eyes are cut out. And so that's interesting.
Someone has an eye fetish.
And then Justin, the engineer, goes to...
The eyes are the window to the soul. If your eyes are gone, where's your soul?
I have no soul. It's a good point, Holly.
Thank you.
Justin, the engineer, goes to the ship's gravity core, and it pretty much reactivates itself, and he gets sucked into a big pool of black water.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes.
I don't think it's me. I don't think I'm smart enough to just know things. I think it's kind of more just kind of how the character was written, but like as soon as the captain was like, Justin.
You go back there.
I was like, he's dead.
He's dead.
Ironically, he doesn't die, though. He
doesn't die right away.
He's the first one.
Well, I mean, if you really think about it, this movie follows a lot of the rules of typical, like, haunted houses.
Sure.
I mean, this basically is a haunted house movie in space.
I kind of thought it was Hellraiser in space.
That's another good parallel, yeah.
First Hellraiser.
Yeah, one or two, you know, before they got weird.
Yeah, they got weird.
Yeah,
can I watch the weird ones and not the scary ones?
None of them were really scary.
No.
Oh.
Well, two was
I
for
had
me.
A creeper dressed as Pinhead grind on me at a Halloween party at a club once.
That's
probably worse than the movies, but I will still never watch the movies.
That's disturbing.
That one's up there. That one's up there.
That's
at Lando's,
that's
Robbie.
Not pretty.
Oh, God. I know that venue. That just amplifies the creep.
That makes it worse.
It certainly does.
So,
sorry. Continue.
No, I'm sorry, Holly.
I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm sorry you were molested by Pinhead.
Yeah, I know.
We'll tear your soul apart.
And your pussy.
Oh, shit.
David,
that was wrong.
Sorry.
Can't you just modify that with proper terminology?
The Jacob.
Oh, God. Okay.
He broke it. He said vagina and he broke it.
He broke the internet when he said vagina.
I broke it.
So when Justin goes disappearing into that dark hole.
We just said pussy.
I like how you got that.
I'm slow.
So the rescue tech, Cooper, he gets a rescue line, and he follows him back after him and tries to save him. But Justin comes through again just beforehand. So
he's seen some shit.
I've seen some shit. He did see some
shit. I went to the asshole, not the vajanga.
Oh, no. Pirates of Darkwater.
Oh!
Don't ruin Pirates of Diarrhea. Of Darkwater.
I know. I do love Pirates of Dark. That needs a remake.
Yes, it does. Yes. In a big, bad way.
I want to be a part of that.
I know.
If anyone is listening and they're currently working on that,
do it.
Well, that's my next project after Sandpire.
Sandpire?
What?
Pirates of Darkwater?
That's my next project after Sandpire.
That's just the gay pornography you're going to film.
Sandpire?
No.
Darkwater?
Yeah, Pirates of Darkwater.
Why would that
it's
be?
It's not anymore.
Could be. The sequel could be. I don't know.
Okay, I'm not signing up for it if it's a porno.
Damn it.
Holly only does tasteful porn.
Not gay porn.
No porn.
All right, no porn.
I'm trying to get Adrian ready to review porn, but.
Who are you trying to get?
Adrian.
Oh, that'd be hilarious, actually.
Put him on the YouTube channel.
No, it would be
porn.
So bad.
Only if it was, like, live reactions.
Put his hair in a ponytail, have him dress in a suit, wear glasses, and, like, cerebrally analyze porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that would be actually hilarious.
Wouldn't it?
That would be really funny.
That would be funny. And, like, don't show clips. Just have him just straight talk about just the plot breakdown.
But show clips completely blurred, and just a giant blur on the screen.
It's so pixelated.
And have him like,
It's so pixelated. It's you can't even see
just
what it is.
It's a giant pixel. It's a giant peach pixel.
I'm actually not joking about this. Here's the text stream. I was talking about this earlier.
That's hilarious.
Here's something that he's dying to say. The lack of grooming harkens back to films of the 70s, but the acting is supremely modern, evoking strong feelings of empathy toward the schoolgirl.
Oh, my God.
That's funny.
Well, I'm glad he's... It should be a Patreon kind of thing.
I agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
Well,
but then he'd have to watch porn.
Then he'd have to be on camera.
Yeah.
That's probably, you know what?
He's so camera shy.
It's probably harder to get him on camera than to ask him to review porn.
That's exactly it, too.
But having him do all of it at the same time will be impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Continue on with Event Horizon.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Anyway, so they rescue Justin, the engineer, and obviously he's all messed up, and they bring him to their sick bay area. Also, when they reestablish the gravity on the ship in the atmosphere, the corpse that's floating around the bridge falls and kind of shatters.
Blows up and there's a balloon of blood.
Kinda, I don't know if it really works that way.
No, probably not.
But it was kind of weird.
It was interesting visual.
It was. Gross.
And that's what they're going for.
And
I think it was the most realistic thing they could do.
Yeah. Yeah, there was
to give you a real feel like sense that you were there or that it actually happened, cuz like the debris floating in the room before the gravity was put back in place, like they had to find some way to tie in the audience. I think it was a good way to do that.
Yeah.
The gravity boots, you mean?
Well, no, just
no,
when the corpse
no.
falls. And it kind of shatters.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that. Just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense that how it would happen.
Right.
When the gravity drive does kick on, it sends out this huge, emits this huge, like, wave. And it actually damages the Lewis and Clark.
A gravity wave.
And so the ship everyone has to leave the ship, Lewis and Clark, to get onto the Event Horizon. And they have to try to find ways to mitigate the damage on the Lewis and Clark. So that's a thing.
They in trouble.
And it's obviously to get them on the ship. So
the ship wants them. The ship owns them.
And the pilot doesn't seem to want to go on either. He's like, there's no way he wants to get on that ship. That's your...
Cooper. No, I'm sorry. That's Smith.
Yes.
The guy from Gotham.
Right.
Yeah.
So they have like 20 hours of oxygen to use that's on the Event Horizon.
It is stale.
It's old fart.
It tastes bad.
Old fart.
Mm.
Fart air.
Honestly, if I got on a ship and it had been lost for how many years had it been MIA?
I think seven.
Yeah.
Seven years. And it's like far away at Neptune. I don't know that. I mean, granted, I'll notice a change in the way the air tastes or smells, but how are you going to know? Like, his instant response is, that's a CO2. And you're like, oh, okay, I accept that. Like,
there's a lot of symbolism in this film, and it should have been at Uranus, because that's the seventh planet.
Good point.
There is a lot... I realize you were cracking a joke, but there was a lot of symbolism in this movie, period. And
I was being serious. Like, I was just thinking about it, because it was seven years it was lost, mm-hmm. and seven's a biblical number, mm-hmm. and then, because they could have used six is also a big, you know, to 666 if it was by Saturn, yeah. But if they wanted to do another seven, they should have done Uranus. I mean, sure, it was a joke, but I mean, I was being serious, if they were going to do the symbolism. Eight's not really a biblical number, I don't think.
No.
No.
It's like seven, six, and nine.
Seven's supposed to be perfection or something.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Seventh heaven.
So, Aaron, please power through that. We need to go.
We need to get this done.
Send a gravity well or bomb or something.
Bomb and Holly.
We can go from born to seventh heaven.
That's right.
At the drop of a hat.
So one of the characters that's on there is Peters, and we get that she's alluded that she has a child back home on Earth, and she gets this visual image of him in the sick bay with his legs all like rotted and stuff like that. Apparently, I don't know if he does have this disease. I wasn't clear about that. I feel like he did have
some kind of terminal or near terminal disease, and she was worried about him.
Yeah.
So that's what's eating at her.
And so
that's her dark past.
So she sees that and she pretty much freaks out. And later on, we get the audio of the ship again, the transmission, and she's trying to clear up what was going on. The second command, the XO.
Stark. Julie Richardson from Nip Tuck.
Right. There you go, another Nip Tuck.
Yeah.
You just love those people.
I love that show
and then all of a sudden they are all showing up.
On our radar.
Yeah, recently. Like, real recently, so it's pretty bizarre. So, yeah, so with that, we get the... there's all sorts of things going on. So Justin is obviously he's incapacitated from what happened to him in the gravity drive, and what's his name, Cooper, the guy who saved him, said, I saw him come out of that. There was water there, and Dr. Weir's like, there's no possible way. There's no water. There's nothing like that, you know. And later on, there is water because there's some kind of coolant link, and it starts pouring into the room
for reasons. Yes.
And
but they mention the coolant. He mentions the coolant leak as soon as he goes in, and he's like, "It doesn't seem to be a dangerous like percentage or something." He says, "I remember because he like wipes the coolant off of a screen, and I was like, huh, that's an interesting way they did those special effects."
What do you think about the special effects? It felt so silly.
So it's in the 90s, and yeah, it's silly, but. Like, I think that the cast reacted well to the special effects.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, they were cheesy for us as viewers, and I'm sure at the time they felt really real, but I was more impressed by the interaction of the cast.
Here's the interesting thing about this movie. This number may sound like a lot, but if you take into effect that this is a Hellraiser or a haunted house movie in outer space, mm-hmm. outer space in general... This movie is composed of mostly practical effects. There's only 400 computer-generated special effects in this film.
Right.
And most of them are the exterior shots of the ships.
Exactly. Or composite shots. For instance, there's a scene with a fireball chasing Lawrence Fishburne later on. Mm-hmm. That does count as two different special effects, the way that they had to shoot that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's only 400 computer-generated special effects in this film.
I honestly, when I saw this originally, I remember the effects of, like, the things floating around and weightlessness, but it didn't wow me, and it didn't make me either way. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Right.
That's all I thought, you know.
I mean, the effects aren't awful for,
no.
I mean, a lot of 1997 movies completely fall apart nowadays.
Oh, God,
This movie doesn't completely fall apart from a visual standpoint. It's not perfect. I mean, it's not bad either.
And here's the interesting thing, too. The ship of the Event Horizon was actually modeled after the Cathedral in Notre Dame.
Really?
Yes. Even the core was actually modeled directly after the altar of Notre Dame.
Yeah, they did a lot of, like, that's what I was saying earlier. They did lots of symbolic things right. in the film.
The quarters are filled with flying buttresses and everything like that.
Hmm. Now, one of you mentioned earlier that this has a lot of biblical significance.
Religious and biblical, yes.
Yeah. So this extended cut that I didn't see, is there more of that in the extended cut? Because
yes.
There were some things, I guess, but like now that you guys say it, I'm like, okay, that's very interesting. And like the window to the like command deck where they, you know, like
makes a cross.
All the controls and stuff are, it's a cross. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. Did we really lose a lot with what was cut, or not really?
I'm going to be very honest with you. I've only been able to track down a few scenes. There are some on the Blu-ray as far as deleted scenes. I think that there's some on one of the special edition DVD releases as well. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. When this film was created, typically speaking, directors were given at that time 10 weeks to compose their director's cut. However, mm-hmm. he had to go back and do some second team reshoots, which took a couple of weeks. So he was only given 6 weeks in order to put together his director's cut. And he was pressured into doing that, which violated the union laws for directors at the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, the movie was cut down even further. So when DVDs and Blu-rays became a thing, and everybody was trying to find the missing pieces of this movie to assemble it into a true director's cut, now that they had the time to do it, they were able to, and I'm not joking about this, track down the missing footage of Event Horizon to a salt mine in Transylvania.
That's
what?
Over 70% of the film was damaged and unusable. The 30% that they were able to find was used in deleted scenes, and there are cuts of this movie with longer bits in it. However, we're never going to be able to see the full movie the way it was intended. The bootleg copies that still float around Comic-Cons to this day are unfinished movies that did not test well with audiences, with incompleted special effects and whatnot, unmastered and unmixed audios, and most of the stuff that we have now is more of the torture stuff. It's more of the more visual, vivid hell scenes in this film.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing some movies that didn't test well with audiences, because people are fucking stupid sometimes.
Check out the producer's cut of Halloween 6.
And it just, like, you know, like the original cut for that Will Smith movie with the zombies where he kills himself at the end, like
Legend.
The Legend. I'm Legend. Like, the original cut ending of that sounded way better than what we got in the film. Like, where he doesn't kill himself. Because, like, him killing, it just made no sense.
The Crow City of Angels, same thing. That movie was supposed to be completely different.
So. Yeah, like, just audience test people are kind of dumb sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, let's get back.
I should be an audience test person.
Yeah, we should.
That'd be fun.
I would love to do that.
I know you would. Well, let's get back to our story. She saw her son with the legs all bloody and messed up operating table there at the sick bay. We also get a scene where Dr. Weir is in one of the gravity drives, like Jeffrey's tubes.
Yeah.
And he's doing some work. Basically,
it looks cool. It's all like green and like...
It looks like a bunch of
circuit boards.
Yeah, exactly. And the lights go out and... we see his ex-wife, or not ex-wife, his wife that's passed away.
His dead wife.
Dead wife.
Again, now...
She's got no eyes.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt and sidetrack again, but He never. Is it ever? I didn't notice that it was ever discussed how she died or if she was actually dead.
She committed suicide because
the straight razor.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
with the straight razor because
that
he spent all his time working on the ship and not spending it with her.
Yep.
Right.
Workaholic syndrome.
I didn't miss it in the beginning though, where like. No, I should have known that until I saw it, right?
It's a line of dialogue.
All I'm going to say is if your spouse is working too hard and you decide that's how you're going to just end yourself, I think it's time to move on.
Yeah.
Come
I hope it wasn't for Dr. Weir. I hope she had other issues happening.
Yeah.
Right. Because
it's not worth it.
You keep playing with your ship, so I'm going to off myself with a straight razor.
Yeah.
It's like...
That you'll shave with.
It's like, damn. It's almost... You know, I get that, you know, suicide is a complicated thing, but, like, it is very clear that when you're gone, your loved ones have to take care of the pieces that you've left. Like, they have to clean up.
Taking your body out of the bathtub.
Exactly, and I...
Shaving with your straight razor.
Yeah.
Shaving with your murder weapon.
I don't think that a loved one's gonna... unless it was a really, really bad relationship, I don't think that that we'll be shaving with their razor.
I don't think so either. It's a whole thing. Honestly, this part, when we find out how she died, it felt so two-dimensional to me.
I couldn't agree more.
Hopefully that's a lead. Maybe she had some other issues.
Couldn't she just be walking across the street and got hit by a car by accident and like he's all torn up about it? Or I mean, that would make sense.
But it's to make him feel guilty for working on the ship.
Maybe he saw the car coming and didn't yell fast enough.
Edith Keeler, no!
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I felt really, really strongly about, and I was really upset that I was wrong, was that, well, maybe I should save that for the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hold on. Time out. Let me type this out so I don't forget it.
So, while you type that, I'm going to go on here. We got and strangely enough, Weir sees us. Dr. Weir sees us in the tube, and he never mentions it to anybody. He's just like, oh, I'm going fucking nuts. I'll keep that to myself, even though I'm out in space.
Don't nobody need to know about that.
Nobody needs to know.
Space crazy is a good normal thing.
Yeah, space madness. And then, what's his name? Justin wakes up and says that the darkness is coming or something to that nature.
And he tries to flush himself out the airlock.
Yes, he does try to do that.
Lawrence Fishburne heroically saves him at the last second.
Was not in the original script for this movie. There was an airlock scene in the original script. It was cut. They added that back because they loved the visual.
There's also a scene where Jason Isaac is one of the, what's his name? The pilot there starts losing it. Smith.
Yeah.
And he starts trying to go after Weir.
And Jason Isaacs puts a scalpel to his neck.
Scalpel to his neck. And he's like, great. Whoa, dude, you're a little on edge.
But the thing is, it's nice. Jason Isaacs not playing a complete asshole. He's not playing a bad guy. He's playing a guy who's like mentally damaged, I'm sure. But like,
he does seem a little bit.
But he's not a straight up asshole, evil person.
I think
like he
was guarded.
Most movies.
Yeah, I don't think he was an asshole. I just think he was guarded.
Right. And this is where the XO Stark basically comes to Captain Miller saying, with this theory, I think the Event Horizon is a living entity itself. It's preying on our fears and our secrets. And she thinks that the hallucinations are going to just increase.
Get worse.
Time, so. And he's like, that's bullshit.
Until he has his own hallucination.
Right. So, as you mentioned, what's his name? Justin goes into, wakes up, and he starts going into the airlock, tries to jump out the airlock, and Captain Miller does save him, but he's all messed up.
Well, the thing is, like, he was obviously possessed because as soon as he decompresses the airlock and it starts its countdown, he comes to.
Yes.
I don't know that he was possessed. I think he was genuinely terrified of what was like, to come.
Oh, I'm going to blow myself out the airlock.
He was facing death, and then he was like, He was looking at the reality of what he just did. I don't think he was possessed. I think he was like genuine, and he was like, "I don't want to be alive when this motherfucker comes for us all."
But then
as soon as he did, he was like, "Oh my god, I have 30 seconds to live. I'm gonna die." And that was the flight or fight or flight thing where it just kicked in and he was like, oh, please save me.
I mean, it's an interesting point, but I feel like his demeanor and the way he spoke totally changed. Like, it sounded like he was possessed.
Not only that, it was also his physical mannerisms. It almost looked like he was being moved as if like he was a mannequin.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because what good would have come from the ship sending him out there? Nothing.
To scare everyone to fucking death.
But that wouldn't have done anything, because it was trying to... The ship wanted to go back into the hole.
Who does?
Get back into
the man's
hole.
Blood.
We're going back to Uranus.
All right. Well, let's just keep on. We got our theories, because I still got a lot to get through here.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so the airlock thing happens. They only have 4 hours of breathable air left, and Captain Miller wants to know what's making these manifestations, like Justin blowing himself up.
I don't know.
And he's like, I don't know. And he won't even admit that he's seen some crazy shit already, you know? So, and this is where they basically, DJ Isaac's character figures out that he's basically, the full Latin phrase is translates to save yourself from hell. And this is, obviously there's something else going on. And they get more of that video of them basically cannibalizing each other and... tearing each other apart.
The scenes that do still exist after the salt mine in Transylvania are fucking vivid.
There's some gross scenes in just the ones that you could see.
Exactly. There's more, including sodomy with a large rusted pipe. It's
uncalled for.
Oh yeah.
So this is totally topic, but can we address the big elephant in the room, like? That distress signal clearly wasn't, like, damaged. It was just screams.
Yeah. I know. They were just like, send out a distress signal. Screams.
Right. Right. And, like, I get that, like, the crew is trapped or stranded or whatever, but come on. The whole movie, they're focusing on what they can't decipher, but they don't take precaution as to what caused the distress.
Well, they've got Dr. Stark as like this metaphysical thing. Oh, I think the ship's alive. Like, she comes to that really quick,
yeah,
and with very little evidence. But they don't have enough forethought to go, let's look for logs we can use.
She wasn't passionate, like strongly voicing that though. That was a private conversation with her and the captain.
Yes,
and he was like, "Yeah, you need to find something else." And she's like, "You asked.
Yeah, you asked." So after they see this video, Miller's like, "We're getting off this ship." And the repairs on Lewis and Clark is almost complete, and Dr. Weir does not want to leave the gravity drive or the event horizon. And he's like, I already am home. I don't have to go home.
Uh-oh.
And this is where Dr. Weir goes crazy.
Oh, yes.
He takes one of the bombs from the long corridor and brings it to the Lewis and Clark.
That's right. So they're, the other side of it is the woman with the son, I think her name is Peters. They're collecting the CO2 scrubbers off of the event horizon. And while they're doing that, she sees her son. And she starts running after him.
You know he's not really there.
He cannot possibly manifest himself millions of miles away from Earth. The kid's legs barely work. How did he walk that far? So
he walked all the way to Neptune.
That's a long walk, Mom. So they got out. So she's chasing in. She falls down and she cracks her head.
And pretty much dies.
She's dead.
It was stupid.
Yeah. It was a dumb way for her to go.
Yeah.
It was.
I was not a fan of that.
Yeah. I was like, come on. Really? I had more respect for her than that.
Mm-hmm. Mama Bear.
Mama Bear.
That was so sweet and creepy at the same time.
Yes. It was creepy.
It was kind of creepy. He was the youngest crew member, and she had son issues, so we get it. It was fine.
She is guilt. She's guilt of leaving her child.
Right.
So this is where, and Weir finds her, and then he's like, oh shit, you know, so, and then, so she finds him on, discovers her body, and that's where he has a vision of his wife committing suicide, and then she says, now if we can be together, we can never, you don't have to be alone anymore, and doesn't have her eyes, and so this is where he's going to take his eyes out as well.
It cuts them out.
Yeah.
Don't need those suckers anymore.
Don't need those.
We're out. Wild jelly.
Bye, Felicia.
She, that was the better joke. I tried to go Shakespeare. She did that.
Yeah.
I do Shakespeare. She does Friday. She won.
There you go.
Aw.
She won.
To be fair, I'm a bigger fan of Shakespeare. So Shakespeare away.
Well, Shakespeare my butt. So Miller, Captain Miller is walking in the corridor and notices when the explosives are missing. And this is where Smith sees that Weir's leaving the Lewis and Clark back to the Event Horizon and is like, what's going on? And
where's the bomb?
And then Miller calls over to Smith saying, I think he did something to the Lewis and Clark. I think there's a bomb on there, because he knew that Dr. Weir didn't want to leave the Event Horizon there.
But he saw, he was in that structure. Yeah. What was that structure called?
The corridor. Yeah,
he saw. He was in the corridor, and he actually, like, he was able to see two separate detonation devices, and he saw that one was tampered with.
Right, and then when Smith sees it, he realizes he doesn't have enough time
to disarm it.
And
there goes Alfred.
And the only one who really lives is Cooper, because he's up on Cooper.
This,
and he goes flying off.
It throws him, and he pulls out his oxygen and blasts off with that to get back to the ship.
Yeah, there's a great... What does he say when he's like, you know...
Why does this always happen to me? It's something funny. Like,
this has happened before. So yeah. Like, it's kind of funny. Like,
right.
Cooper is pretty funny in that.
He's the one piece of levity in this movie that's super dark and depressing.
I know, and needs a little more. Yeah. Needs a little more, you know. So Cooper uses his own spacesuit, like I said, and he goes back, travels back to the Event Horizon. So he's on his way back, and there's only a few survivors. This is where Miller is like, okay, I got to take out Weir, and he starts hunting him down with some kind of rivet gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds his Exo Stark there as well, and she's knocked out. And so when he goes to save Stark, he finds the gun's missing, and then that's Weir's there on the bridge, and his eyes is torn out. And he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
but he sutured them. So a scene before this is when Dr. Weir
kills DJ.
Murders Isaac.
Jason Isaacs.
Isaacs.
And
hangs him up like a weird animal
totally
from the ceiling.
Does that whole weird suspension shit and like opens his intestines and everything is laid out on the table. But anyway, right before this is when that happens, but It was odd direction or whatever, because Jason Isaacs' character is laying on the table and he lifts up, like opens up the shirt, and you see this long scar, and then you see him grab a scalpel, and he grabs a scalpel, and then the next thing you see him grab is sutures.
Yeah.
But then the next scene you see Jason Isaacs' body suspended on hooks,
right.
Completely opened. The whole chest cavity is open.
How much time did Weir actually have to do all this? I mean, I'm
right.
They're hunting him down to kill him, and he's having lots of fun with that body.
He's like,
hey,
I'm making it a Christmas ornament.
Yeah, I know.
But
it's Christmas.
But what I thought was weird was that it went immediately from scalpel to suture, and the suture. You see, when you actually see Dr. Weir's body, his eyes are stitched, like his lids are stitched closed. But like, I don't know, I think it was just a poor decision for the movie.
Sure.
to make it so soon after. Like, I don't know, it just didn't flow well, and it kind of broke.
Lots of deleted scenes. I think there could have been some other
stuff. I guess there are a ton of deleted scenes, but that was just something I thought of that was weird. That
I just thought the time between Miller chasing down Weir and finding DJ totally hung and hamstrung from the ceiling with all this, you know, disemboweled. I thought that
it should have been real close to each other.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he didn't have enough time to do.
Well, yeah, because right. Cooper is also blasting himself back to the ship at this point, and then Sam Neill goes up, but Weir gets up to the ship to the bridge and starts to fight Lawrence Fishburne.
And to boot, when we see Weir, he's not that bloody.
No,
you know?
He's.
You know.
Maybe he wore a nice lab coat.
Yeah, maybe
he did. And took it off after he was done.
He had a jumpsuit.
It's like, bleed over there! The stains!
Stains.
He's a clean demon-possessed person.
Yeah, out of club soda!
He's clean freak.
I was going to say, if David's theory of possession is going to be, like, dominant here, I think that the body of Dr. Weir could be dead, and at least the sutures, that's why the sutures wouldn't have bled. But then later on you see him and he's all cut up and...
Oh, that's when he's definitely dead.
So that
dead.
Would really work.
Oh, he died.
No. Oh, he died.
Oh, he died. He just came back.
He did.
The ship brought him back.
Well, so, like I said, they meet on the bridge with Stark, Miller, and Weir. Weir's eyes are torn out, and he has a gun, and this is where they get into a tussle, and obviously one of the windows gets blown out, and Weir gets blown out the window.
And Koopa comes in.
But first, they get out of the bridge with Stark and Miller, and by that point, they're escaping, and like you said, they find Cooper. They're going to kill him too, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, "No, don't hit me!" It'd be hilarious. He just made it, and then just like they beat the shit out of him. I'm like, "Oh fuck!
Oh man!"
Can I really have to say something about this scene?
Mm-hmm.
So Cooper and Stark are not Cooper. Cooper's coming in the hatch, but Stark and the captain are poised to attack whoever's coming out of this hatch, right?
Right.
So the way that they're staged, they would have knocked each other out.
Oh, the way they're standing?
Yeah, because they're facing like the Three Stooges. Other. One is left-handed, one is right-handed. They would have knocked each other out.
Right.
It would not have worked. Well, that was poor. Poor direction.
Poor direction.
You're an actor. You can pretend to be left-handed. Just stay in the same direction.
So at this point, they're basically... Miller's, I'm going to blow that neck up on the ship, and we're going to get away from this gravity drive thing.
We're using the escape boat.
And so he basically, like, get up front, and this is where he sets up everything to blow up, and where he gets confronted with his fear of the guy we mentioned before. We didn't talk about it, but he's haunted by a guy who he sawed burned to death on an old ship, old crewmate, and he's chasing after him, and so he runs through this fiery corridor into
Call it an inferno, man. That's basically what it was.
Into the gravity drive, and this is where he meets Weir. Weir's still alive or been reanimated.
Reanimated by the ship, but Weir's also embodying his dead shipmate.
Right.
And then he's like, "You're dead, you can't be you." He's like, "Yes, it's me from Jurassic Park."
Yes.
Welcome to dinosaurs.
Thing about Homeboy that was burning alive during that scene. That is the only animatronic in this movie.
Really?
And it was set on fire 73 times.
That's awesome.
73 wow. times they had to keep on igniting this for every single different take, because lots of the faux skin that they used was flame retardant just to keep it constantly burning but not have to build a new one every time.
Right.
They had to douse it and reignite it every single take.
Oh, that's crazy.
And all of the time that you see it, 73 times they ignited that thing. It is the only animatronic in the movie.
So this is where Dr. Weir grabs Lawrence Fishburne, and he basically shows him hell, and he shows his crew members
that are still alive getting tortured.
Tortured in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just, decides to hit the button. And
sacrificing himself.
Blows himself up, and he blows up the whole back end of the Event Horizon with the gravity drive. And we have the front of the ship gets projected forward with Stark and Cooper still on it. But
And the kid.
The kid. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They bring him.
What's his name? Smith, the engineer, who's still barely alive.
No, Smith was the dead guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was his name?
I'm looking. Justin.
Justin, right. And so they get shot off. But the funny thing is that huge gravity well, you would think they get sucked back into it.
But they don't.
But they don't.
But the gravity well ship, it goes in, and Lawrence Fishburne's in hell. Poor Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence Fishburne in hell. And so then the crew puts himself in those water
pods,
and they are rescued.
But Stark has a dream.
72 days later, yes.
Stark has a dream. And she sees Sam Neill again. Jurassic Park, bitches!
Yes. So.
And then she wakes up, and the crew is actually being saved.
Right.
But are they?
Are they?
And the door closes.
Yes, we don't know.
And the movie's over.
Robbie, what do you think about this movie?
I'm going to be very blunt and honest with you, man. The very first time I saw this movie, it was absolute nightmare fuel.
Really?
I love... Even now, because I in preparation for this movie, I was wrong. I could not find it on any streaming site, so I didn't end up running it on Prime. I still love this movie. Mm-hmm. But the very first time I saw it, I'm going to venture a guess. It came out in 1997, if memory serves.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I saw it in maybe 99, 2000.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't a new release at that point. It gave me nightmares. Mm. I thought that so many of the visuals were just wholly impactful. I thought a lot of the religious iconography was subtly placed throughout to help to inform and embellish the scenery and embellish the story, but it didn't really come right up on Front Street. It didn't beat us over the head.
Yeah,
it was there is subtle. Religious iconography in the movie, bitch! You know, it was just enough to make things unsettling. So when you see the fact that the hull is like across, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you know one of those images or some kind of symbolism, you can sort of make the connections while you're watching
Precisely. Right? And once I learned that the entirety of the event Horizon is based directly on the Notre Dame Cathedral, like I said, I found that out going into my most recent viewing of it. Watching it with that information now, it takes on a whole new meaning when you're seeing some of this architecture.
I read that after I watched the movie. I want to watch the movie again just to see, like, to look for the iconography more.
Right.
Because I wasn't paying attention to it. I was just kind of watching the actors and stuff like that.
Right. But once you know this stuff, once you notice that stuff, you don't unsee it. And you're sitting there like, oh my God. And it almost... Because there's so much ambiguity with the ending of the movie, it almost makes me wonder if that was the intent of the original iteration of the Event Horizon, or maybe that is what this twisted abomination Leviathan thing that came out of this hell dimension was turned into.
Right.
You know, was this originally what was there or not? Because there's so much ambiguity in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has their own personal slice of hell in this film. I think that this movie is wholly effective, if you allow it to be. It was nightmare fuel for me for the very first time I seen it, and I still love this movie to this day.
Mm.
I think it's fantastic. The acting is top-notch. Special effects, even today, a lot of them
great actors in this movie.
Yeah.
Sure. So many good actors.
Yeah.
Dave.
Let's do Holly next.
Oh, you want to do Holly. All right.
Oh, you want to do Holly.
You're
a Holly. That's not what I meant.
It's okay. I don't have a lot more to say. I think that a lot of what Robbie said that wasn't biblically based, I kind of agree with. Some thoughts I had that we didn't discuss were like Dr. Wire's visions. I felt like they didn't seem like fears. They seemed a little more prophetic. And then with the crew, it was more fear, which was interesting because the end of the movie, Stark has a similar type dream, but I kind of accepted that more as a PTSD thing rather than prophetic. It was really more like direction that I kind of had thoughts on. But one of the things that I felt really strongly about in the beginning of this film when I was watching it was I thought, and it would have been a completely different movie if this were the case, I was convinced that the crew were on a time loop and that the going through the wormhole had begun this weird little time loop where all of the dead things that were on the Event Horizon were actually the crew from what was their ship?
The Lewis and Clark.
So I was just looking for anything to make my theory plausible, and like it didn't happen. Never came to fruition, obviously. But I thought that would have been really cool if all the dead bodies that were plastered in the infirmary were actually their bodies, but it just hadn't happened yet. And it was
you're around your own dead body. It's floating.
Yeah, that's I was funny. Convinced that that's what was going to happen until
that would have been scary, though.
It could have been scary. Your own self is telling you that you're going to die.
Holly,
I can't remember what
your theory was confirmed in deleted scenes that are never going to see the light of day.
You're kidding me.
The crew of the Lewis and Clark is in the hell scene.
Oh my God. Wow. That
is not in the movie. Now. It is not canon, but it was filmed.
So wait a second. So you're saying originally that they were in...
Originally, the footage that is coming from them, the crew from the Lewis and Clark is in that footage as well. So they're actually seeing the past, the present, and the future in that footage.
It's a whole bunch of distress signals. That would have been cool. Yes. That would have made the movie so much more interesting.
That's awesome.
Because the movie, so,
see, that's what
good.
I was thinking. That's what I thought it was.
That is in the script. That was filmed. That was cut, taken out. The footage is destroyed in a salt mine in Transylvania. I am not joking about this.
That's
in
crazy.
Pennsylvania.
We have lots of farmland.
I don't know why. I think it's so interesting that the footage for this movie is in a salt mine in Transylvania.
How did it get
that
there?
Is so yeah. weird.
That much I don't know.
Call W.S. Anderson's vacation spot. With
Come with me to Transylvania.
He cosplays as Dracula for her.
So it's very interesting that you had that theory because, I mean, I'm not saying that you were right, but you were not exactly wrong. Because that footage was filmed.
So,
time loops have been
wow,
fun.
That's crazy.
My thought is that, you know, that's really, I mean, I didn't come to that conclusion whatsoever, but that's really, very astute of you, Holly, that you would even pick that up. I could see why they cut that because I think it would just confuse the fuck out of people. Like the audience would be like, what? You know, because I mean, honestly, time travel movies and stuff like that, unless it's really spelled out for people, they really do not get time travel movies.
Yeah.
That's true.
But it would be so much fun if it was like another 30 minutes long and they see some of their bodies, but not all of them, because some of their bodies were lost or burnt or like blown out of the space. Like, that would have been cool. Why isn't my body? We see other, like, it could have been a mystery.
It's interesting.
It could have been really interesting. I have a time loop like Star Trek, but like do it like in a movie, but with horror. Mm-hmm. That could be really interesting.
What about you?
I really enjoy this movie. Like, it's not a terrible movie. It's not a fantastic movie. It's like right in the middle, and it's like a sweet spot for like weird sci-fi horror. And it's not something I see a whole lot that's like decent, because usually sci-fi horror is like god awful.
Yes.
And this movie is pretty good.
Lots of times it's awful. It. Yeah.
Leprechaun in space.
Leprechauns in the hood in space.
Leprechaun in the hood.
Leprechaun in the hood out to do no good.
Oh, Jesus.
Don't at me.
Oh, my God.
I know the song.
Wow.
Don't at me, Aaron O'Brien.
Can't believe you know that.
Warwick Davis, a national treasure.
Oh, God, yes.
But it's a good movie. It's well constructed. Like I said, when I read later after we watched it this last time about the religious iconography, and as I watched it, some of the sets did catch my eye. I was like wondering what was going on, like some of the designs and how symmetrical they were. It was really interesting. But I was like, I didn't really think about it other than just like this, how symmetrical some things were. I didn't think about it religiously or iconography. But now I really want to look into it and rewatch it with that in mind, because I think that'd be a lot more interesting rewatching. Looking at the sets more, and
I
want to see the lost footage too. I want to see this movie complete in the way it was meant to be. And it's all the actors are so much older now; they can't even redo it. I guess they can use the de-aging stuff. I mean that's coming a long way.
The only way that they could do this is to completely remake the movie. You know what I mean? Like,
Paul W.S. Anderson, do it again.
Do it again.
Better.
Do it better this time.
We'll give you the full 10 weeks for the director's cut.
People have been floating around had to have a sequel of this. I don't think this movie would do well for a sequel.
There's no reason for it.
No.
No, sequel would do nothing but water down the ambiguity that's already there.
Yes.
Because that ambiguity is what helps fuel those nightmares.
Yes.
Remake it the way it was intended to be made.
Yes.
And then maybe do a sequel to that.
Well, you know, when Robbie said that there was so much cut from the film, I wasn't surprised, because I did feel like there was a lot missing from the film. Like, for instance, Dr. Weir is always meh when he's questioned, and it was very odd that someone would.
Right.
Yeah, that someone would be put in charge of a mission, a very delicate black ops mission, who could be so blasé about
what's
going on. And
so mentally unstable, too.
Yeah. And so mentally unstable. And so...
Let's send her to Neptune. There's no problem there.
I'm curious, like, what I would love to see a documentary on why they had to cut so much from this film, because I feel like they had to cut away so much that could have really helped kind of make things a little more cohesive, but yeah. Then they would have, you know, lost time. You could have been distracted. Yeah.
I feel like there's also a missing scene where Stark, where she figures out the ship, because I feel like she just kind of jumps to that conclusion without any actual evidence.
Yeah, most likely.
There was a moment where I thought maybe Stark was like an apparition, like a mental. There really was. What was it? It was right
there
after
is
they
no
rescued
spoon type scenario.
Cooper.
There's
a kind of. It was right after they save Cooper, and the captain goes to
gravity drive.
Yes, to the gravity drive.
The
and I had to rewind because I was like, wait, did or not Cooper? I keep saying Cooper, Stark. I thought Stark was
an
aberration.
Yeah,
I thought maybe she was an apparition because I was like, wait, did Stark even acknowledge her, or was this the captain's like imagination? And like, it was so random that I just
friend.
Was shit.
That would
I gotta
be
rewind.
Funny. That would be funny too.
but
she's
but
like
Cooper
Harvey.
Actually acknowledges him. Yeah.
It's a big rabbit.
Or maybe the ship's speaking through her because she's the next chosen one to kind of start it all over again at the end of the movie.
Maybe.
Well,
that would be interesting.
Because
that would be really interesting. Because
that would, if the ship is speaking through her, that would have been fantastic.
That would explain her PTSD weird premonition dream thing.
There's no evidence for it. What were your thoughts, Aaron?
Yeah.
I think this movie starts off strong. I think it's a beautiful looking movie and a lot of great actors. I just think I think all the stuff that we were saying, as Holly's kind of been alluding to it, I think there's a lot of breakdown of sequences that could have been either built up or better narratively shown. A lot of it just gets to me, like, you know, it's just, it jumps from intrigue to full blown horror. And if they would have like siphoned that through a little longer, stretched that out a little bit. I don't know how you would do it. I'm not the guy that, but it just,
from what Robbie's saying, it sounds like studio meddling.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Oh, in a big bad way.
It's not. It's
a big bad way.
It doesn't sound like it's Paul W.S. Anderson's fault.
And if there was a time loop thing, I think that would have been far more
interesting. Keep in mind, the studio wanted this movie to be PG-13.
Yeah.
Oh.
They were pushing for that for the majority of the time it was made.
Don't make
PG-13. In the 90s, PG-13, you could have blood and gore.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
not like this.
No.
Not like this.
I mean, if you go through the hell scenes, I went through the hell scenes and I stopped and I paused to see each one of those.
You did that too?
They're quite disturbing.
Yeah.
So
imagine how much more disturbing they got.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Because
yeah.
That was the footage that was allowed in.
So, yeah.
There's a lot more maggots, I'll put it that way.
There's more maggots.
There's a lot more maggots.
So many more.
Are there maggots in space?
Maggots. There are in a hell dimension.
Oh, okay. I just honestly there's.
Oh my god, that is a really good point.
What,
Aaron?
What?
That maggots there should be no maggots. I
there are in
lies.
A hell dimension, Holly. We've established
no.
This.
There's hell.
Well,
hell maggots.
They're hell maggots. They're
hell
maggots.
Hell maggots.
Fuck magnets. Magnets. Fuck maggots
Stalagmites.
And flies. No. Not allowed.
So,
not allowed.
I honestly, it was one of those things that I felt like the movie kind of has a great premise, has a great visual effects, great actors, and I just think somehow it just starts disassembling itself further down. And there's even some sequences, like honestly, the sequence when Loris Fishburne's pit pushes the button to blow up the ship. It just seemed corny to me because it's like in slow motion.
It was bad.
I can give you that.
Choices. Just like,
I can give you that. I'm not saying that this is a perfect movie. I'm also saying that horror is subjective, and what works on me doesn't work on everybody.
And when you saw that, I'm sure you were what, 15, 14?
Let's say at that point, 13, 14 for the first
time. Yeah, so that's probably a great time to see a movie like that to be like, getting your like
right. I wasn't exactly a
at
cinephile
that time,
at
like
that time.
So
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe it is the nostalgia that keeps this movie fresh and keeps this movie amazing to me. Maybe it's the core concept. Maybe it's the acting. I don't know. But
I was older. I was much older, and you know, it just was one of those things that just like I've seen
horror movies before, and this was like, oh, this isn't our horror schlock. The only thing that was cool about it was that it was out in space, and like you said, it's well done. And there were some cool actors in it. You know, Robbie, you know, probably just got off of his shift working at the Cinnabon, and he came to go see the movie and was not expecting to be terrified.
What do you think my life was?
I don't know. But I'm hoping you worked at the Cinnabon and had a great time.
We didn't know what Cinnabon was until we branched out to big cities.
There used to be a place called Cindy's Cinnamon Rolls.
That's close enough. Whatever.
They were delicious. Did they have them up here?
The non-franchised one? Yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here, if you give her an extra couple bucks, she lets you squeeze her breasts. So.
Oh. Okay.
The glaze isn't quite sugary.
It's different. It's different here.
What happens in Snakeland stays at Snakeland.
That's right. Anyway,
I need that shirt, by the way.
You're wearing the Snakeland shirt.
I'm wearing one.
I'm not talking about your exact shirt. I'm not saying I need a game-worn jersey. I'm saying on Friday I'm walking away with one of those.
Cool.
So, just in the movie, one question I had that I wanted to wait till the end to talk about was for everybody. When do you think Weir was taken over by the ship?
I think.
Was he taken over by the ship before he arrived? Yes. When he started having premonitions?
I think when he made it.
Or when he was sitting in the chair, the captain's chair, because that's when he started acting weird. Because at the captain's chair, when they're banging on the door, they're running away from the premonitions. Mm-hmm. That's when he started acting weird. I mean, before he was just hiding. He was hiding the premonitions.
Just remember, his wife killed herself, and there could have been other reasons why she did that. So my feeling is that something was planted long before.
Yeah.
That's just it. Based on what you literally just said, the wording choices you used, I agree with you. I think he was taken over in full force the minute he sat in the captain's chair. Mm-hmm. I think he was being influenced and had his strings pulled.
Yes.
I don't even think that he came up with the core idea for this. Mm. I think that he was a susceptible person that maybe was just like...
dabbling in black arts and science.
The Book of fucking Job.
The Book of Job.
God and the devil have a bet over a guy named Job. Why this guy? I don't know. Maybe there's just something about you that pissed me off. Maybe just luck of the fucking draw, man. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And Satan says, I'm choosing you.
Exactly.
But the thing is, with the time loop... With the time loop theory that Holly was talking about, and the deleted scenes that you said were shot...
And he's thrown out of a Pokeball. I chose you, Dr.
Gotta
Weird.
Gotta catch them all. It's so true.
Well, just
with that gravity drive was just a big Pokeball.
You torture me, I'll torture you. Poke
it up your anus.
Oh,
Pokemon. Well, oh, that's dirty. Never mind.
But what I was saying was like if the time loop thing is true and the gravity drive deleted scenes are time loop based, then the inception of it, like you were saying, could have been the hellscape was talking to him. It made him obsessed.
Yes.
It also latched to his wife. She commits suicide because she's associated with
the dominoes fall from there.
And then it becomes its own self-replicating.
I honestly think he was taken over body and soul the minute he sat in the captain's chair. It just symbolically makes sense.
And let me just point out that...
symbolically, yes.
As in the pilot of Deep Space Nine, time to us is linear, but if you are not a creature that lives in the space of time...
fourth-dimensional being, it doesn't matter.
Moves back and forth like we move through the third dimension. So to them, it could be like they're all over the place.
Holly, are you kept up on The Good Place yet?
I'm very close. Like,
if you didn't see this last week's episode, then what I'm about to say will make no sense to you.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I will bring up a chat window
Jeremy
for
Baird.
Skype, and I'm going to take my headphones off, and you just text me when you're done, yeah?
Okay.
Time being completely nonlinear is the whole idea. Jeremy Baird-ly.
Okay.
I
don't know what you're talking about. So.
Basically, it boils down to we see time as a line in ethereal dimensions. For whatever reason, the way time runs... it seems to look like the name Jeremy Baird-ly, written in cursive, including the I. which just happens to be Tuesdays, and also nothing.
It's always a Tuesday.
I don't know.
I've never seen the show.
But time being linear to us, obviously we move forward through time. Like if we are on a person on a flat piece of paper and we move through the third dimension and those little guys on the second dimension go like, whoa,
yeah,
those guys must be gods. And to us, we see, you know, people that can move through the fourth dimension of time and go like, God's whoa, us.
Yeah,
they can just go through any place in time, you know, so it's
fascinating. It's, yeah. It's really, really, really interesting.
So if they mm-hmm. do go through time and space, then it, those the crew being on a time loop of some sort or some kind of caught in time, and then on top of that, who knows how far these demonic forces or from hell, from wherever they can reach to Dr. Weir, maybe influence his wife to die, to make him go mad, to whatever. So
I mean, yeah. Like this would have been such a great backstory if all this had happened and we got to see some of it happen, or they talked about some of it happening. Because if he was like not taken over, but just influenced tangentially mm-hmm. when he was making the drive, and they had sparked the idea, and like just the tangential touch tainted her soul to where she wanted to kill herself, and that could have been way, way more interesting. And then it makes the time loop. That would have been a lot of fun.
I would like a heady
horror movie instead of schlock horror movie.
Yeah,
right. And honestly, watching the movie through that lens, it kind of forgives a lot of the sins that this movie had.
I did hear that there were deleted scenes, but I didn't know what they were. So I never paid that much attention to it.
I don't know what all of them are, and I'm not going to pretend to. I do know what some of them are.
Right.
I've seen a few of them.
Right.
I can't unsee some of them. There's a lot of maggots.
Well,
there's a lot of maggots.
So that's Event Horizon. I mean, it's a fun movie. I don't know if I would want to watch it on a yearly basis. Maybe.
Oh, no. I wouldn't watch this on a
10-year basis.
It's no Fight Club.
No, right.
Where I like to watch that once a year.
Christmas. First Die Hard movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That's how I am with books. It's, I get sad to me, when I'm like, oh man, I've got like 2 weeks to read this book before fall is over.
To me, it's good, but it's not yearly Halloween good.
No.
It's also bad, but it's not so bad that it's yearly Halloween good. You know what I mean?
It's a very middle-of-the-road movie.
Yeah.
But for a science fiction horror movie, it's got to be one of the
best. It's like, what more do you want? For that, you know what I mean?
And now if you watch it with our theories, it makes the movie so much better.
I'm
enjoying the movie better thinking about it with our theories.
Right. And like, also knowing some of this backstory about not only the architecture, but the deleted scenes and whatnot, you know, it does add more layers to this film.
Oh, for sure.
And then, you know, same and then just her Stark getting the vision like Sam Neill did as soon as, like, they left.
They were in
thing.
The.
So
yeah,
she's starting to loop over.
Right.
So she's bringing hell back to wherever she's gotten to.
Right.
Which is going to be fan. I mean, you could totally do a sequel to it, but I mean, all the actors are old now, so you'd have to like restart it.
I don't think this movie needs a sequel.
No.
Or a remake, tell you the truth.
I would love to see a remake made with the movie as it was supposed to be intended to be, with the deleted scenes intact. And
that is the only way I could see a remake of this movie.
Yeah, I'd rather a remake
being appropriate. I don't need a sequel to this movie, but a remake for the way this film should have been, I will take.
I would love like Jodorowsky's Dune. Get that kind of
Salvador Dali and a giraffe.
Like get that kind of brilliance to make this movie remake amazing, and not just remake it as it is, but remake it as it should have been.
Well, I have thoughts on this.
Event Horizon as made by David Lynch.
Oh, God, that'd be hilarious.
I need a chimpanzee here. Coop, we need to put a chimpanzee in.
A chimpanzee in this scene.
Nice donut and coffee.
Well, I have thoughts on this whole horror remake. Let's do a sequel thing. I didn't consider this a horror film.
Really?
Yeah.
Wouldn't take my kids to see it.
I get that there's a lot.
Did
of
you
death.
See it as a rom com there, Holly? Because
oh yeah, there's a rom com between Stark and Cooper.
No, I just barely. Legitimately saw it as a science fiction. Like I really didn't see it as any kind of horror. I guess maybe my view on horror is skewed because
Robbie,
when I do watch horror, I'm I don't know. And I end up critiquing the directors. I don't know.
You kind of have. I mean, you've had some pretty poignant thoughts about this movie.
You
already
have, Holly.
Yeah.
I think
so. Even by your own definition,
it's still a horror movie.
Yeah. I critique it and I look for this. Yeah, but you've done that.
You have.
Well, then I would love, if they do a sequel or a reboot, I would love to see more horror then, for me.
Wow. I don't know if I'd want to see more horror in this movie.
Challenge accepted.
Paul W.S. Anderson, do it again.
I mean, gore doesn't equal horror, right?
Not
necessarily.
Not to me at all.
Actually, war movies aren't technically horror movies. They have short horrific things.
So, yeah.
I kind of like horror movies without as heavy gore, because heavy gore gets a little bit like, meh, okay, you're just trying to
I'd rather
gross.
A psychological thriller.
Yes.
I would rather you get into my head and find something that resonates.
Because
with
I think if you do have that horror scene in a psychological thriller, it's so much more like, whoa,
yeah.
Wow.
I would much rather watch Insidious than Saw. Yes. Let me put it that way. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, if they would have used the deleted scenes and the stuff we were talking about that could have been in deleted scenes, this movie would have been a more heady psychological thriller plus gore
plus like, carnage candy. Yes.
It would have been
yeah,
great.
But it would
best
have been
of both worlds.
Yes. But blame the studios, honestly. Blame the studios.
Studios always best.
They wanted
up.
That PG-13 so bad.
That's crazy.
But it was still
and they went far enough to violate procedure and
oh, they
the
flat
union
out violated union law. Yes.
That's crazy.
He ended
that's
up
crazy.
With less than half of the time that any director is allotted for a director's cut back in 1997.
So the fact that the movie is as good as it is a miracle.
It is a goddamn miracle that we're even watching the movie that we have.
Yeah.
This movie should not exist as it is, but yet it does.
Yeah.
That's
really one way to look at it.
I mean,
even
yes. Even from the standpoint of the writer who wrote this, he picked this out of however many scripts he went through. I mean,
over 40.
It's a miracle.
Yes. Right. And this movie, really, by all accounts, everything being stacked against this, it should not exist, the version we have.
Yeah.
But it does. Yeah. Now, granted, maybe the director's cut that he wanted could have been a hot steaming pile of poopy doop. I don't know. But I don't know. I mean, this movie, we've got varying levels of good. I don't think I've heard anybody said that this movie sucks, don't ever watch it. You know
no.
what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not as crazy as you guys.
Aaron's our lowest.
You're lowest on the barometer, but even you were like, it was.
You could watch
five
it.
Every ten yeah, every I five mean, 10 years.
Was it better than real life?
Oh yeah. Yeah, our last episode of Voyager. Yeah.
So
it's not hard to beat Voyager.
There
though.
You go. Yeah.
No, I just think it's like a C movie. Some people are like it's a B movie. I'm like, nah, it's more C, but it's watchable and for the visuals and the actors.
The effects are too good to be a C movie.
I know, but it's just like I said, the plot falls apart more and more. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, give it a C plus.
It's true.
Give it a C plus.
it.
But the thing that blew me away rewatching it was just so many genre actors. You had Jolie Richardson, Nip Tuck, Lawrence Fishburne, Ant Man of the Wasp. I mean,
that's where Matrix. You go to, not the Matrix.
Well, no, just that. That's his most recent thing.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
you know,
fair.
He's tied into
it's
Marvel.
Like
he
now. Was in Deep Cover. Did you want to go back that far?
Well, no, but it's just the Marvel. And Marvel's the big thing now. He's just in that.
Which he's also got, Perry White.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's true. That's true. I forgot because the DC movies have been so bad. I wanted to. Reference a good film, not a bad one.
Hey, James Gunn is doing Suicide Squad 2.
Which means it'll be amazing, probably.
Most likely.
Where the first one was
well,
bad.
Well, he's at least writing it. We don't know if he's directing yet.
Oh, man. I'd still want to see it if he's writing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he did great with Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, we've got the guy from Gotham. I don't remember who Cooper. He's familiar. He looks familiar. I can't place him in anything, though. Like, he's seems like he plays characters like that in other films.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, like, notable actors. So, I mean, this was not a cheap, like I said, $60 million to make this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of money.
And yeah. I'm trying to remember how long pre-production was, but they dumped their wad.
Yeah.
In making the sets for this movie.
Yeah.
The sets were amazing.
The sets were amazing, and they were made within... If memory serves,
it's Pinewood.
2 months for all of the sets in this movie.
Oh, that's crazy.
That is astronomical. And
they're huge
they
sets.
Paid for it, too. They paid top dollar for that.
Right.
So
That's just another reason. This movie should not exist. Somehow, you can rent it right now. I don't know.
Well, they put enough money into it, then they have to release it at least.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. The quality of the movie, the version of this film that we have. I mean, it is right. Definitely not perfect, and please don't think that I'm blowing it. But
you know, apparently, the residuals from it, from the DVDs and Blu-ray, has made this movie Paramount some money. So
it's definitely cult status.
I definitely feel like the movie was kind of ahead of its time.
For sure.
For what it is.
Because sure.
I appreciated it on my most recent watch more than I ever did on any previous watch.
That's fair.
With you know, knowing where these actors have gone and knowing what they're in now. And just like, oh, I know these people. It's surprise to me. Like, it's like
seeing and now knowing what you know now, you almost want to go back and rewatch it tonight.
I do want to go back and rewatch it. I need to get the Blu-ray and watch the deleted scenes.
Yeah. That's fine. I think I'm going to buy that too.
I don't know if I'll watch it again anytime soon, but whatever.
Well, if I get the Blu-ray, I'll invite you over.
Thanks.
Are you over here?
Give me a couple years.
Spoon.
Yeah, we can spoon.
I'll be the goddamn ladle, okay?
Ladle. It is made.
I made it all.
All right, should we wrap this up, gentlemen?
I think so. It's getting kind of late.
Let's wrap it up.
It's late.
Yes.
Shut up, Cali girl.
Silly California people in their early time zones.
It's wonderful. Although I woke up this morning and it was 9 o'clock. Well, I didn't wake up at 9. I got up earlier. I just stayed in bed because you can on Sundays.
Sunday.
I get to the top of the stairs and I hear football. And instantly I went grumpy cat and I was like, already?
Again.
How is it football day already?
Because Michael, that's what he was so excited about moving out there for.
I know.
From morning to night.
That's basically
12 hours of football. Uninterrupted.
Yeah.
That's Michael's
dream. You can
stop
watching football at like 8 o'clock at night and all of the games are over.
I don't understand.
But today there was a game in London, apparently. So that's why it's so early.
I don't know. They have football stadiums in London. That seems strange. Robbie, where can we find you on the ye olde internet?
You can find me anywhere you listen to podcasts. All you have to do is just look for Nerdynomicon, okay? Also, if you need that fat stimulation of video as well, youtube.com/Nerdynomicon. I'm doing the 31 vlogs of Halloween this month. That means 31 straight days of content. Yes, that's right. Somebody out there is fucking stupid enough to do that. And that person is me.
Yay. It's you.
Woo. 21 straight days with content. I have not missed a day yet. And tomorrow's video is ready to go. So
congratulations.
Nice.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Well, the show, you can find it at synthaholics.com. You can, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. On Twitter, the show is at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. And Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
Absolutely. Please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us there. Gets more views that way for people can see our show. Also, if you can, please go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw a little cash our way. A buck a month. It's not much to ask to help keep our show going. As well,
it's half the price of a cup of coffee, my friends. Come on. A month?
A fourth if you go to Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Less than that. Yes, that's right.
Also, if those two ways are not accessible for you one way or the other, we understand. But a great way to support the show is tell a friend.
You like the Mormons, go door to door.
Go door to door. However you like, you know, just...
I'd like to talk to you about our gods, the Synthaholics.
Talking about Event Horizon, a ship that's damned, that's gone to hell and back.
Seriously, tell your grandparents about this show, man. I mean... Ask them, hey, Grandma, do you remember I Love Lucy way back in the day? Did you know that she inadvertently led to the creation of this podcast called The Synthaholics?
Really?
Yes. You need to listen to this, Granny.
Absolutely.
We love Lucy here.
Because the dominoes have fallen, bitch.
Right. So, let somebody know. So that's where we're at. Let people know.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks all for listening. Thanks for tolerating this non-Star Trek episode Halloween special featuring Robbie Palmer from his 31 days of Halloween.
He's exhausted. So you have no idea.
So this means he's watched 32 Halloween movies because he's watched another horror movie for us.
Fuck you, man. I'm reviewing this movie.
You just review this. Do it again.
No, this is not in the 31 Blocks of Halloween.
See?
I did this straight for you guys.
Yes, that's awesome.
Also,
thank
just
you.
Just a quick announcement. I do have my Return to Snakeland signing this Friday, October 26th. So
if anyone's in Buffalo area.
If you are in the Buffalo area, we are at the Revolutions Gallery. It's on Hurdle Avenue, and it's going to be from 6 to 9. There'll be lots of music, DJs, and food and booze. So
I'll be definitely stopping by. So please, everybody, stop by. Say hello. Say hello to the man
Friday
himself.
Night. Friday night.
I'll be working.
Friday night. Aaron, is there
I'm
any
walking
way
in wearing something
order?
Sexy, but I'm walking out wearing something even more sexy with that snake leg shirt. I don't need a game worn jersey. Stop trying to give that to me.
I keep trying to take my shirt off. Show you my tits.
Aaron, is there any way people can order from you, like, online?
So we do have returnsnakeland.com, but the shopping or whatever site, the purchasing site's not completely ready yet. So, but hopefully in the next couple weeks we'll have it ready. We're just
we'll throw a link up on the Facebook group and the Facebook page, you know, once that's up and good.
If
so
if you are interested in the graphic novel,
so even more reason to jump on the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/ethaholics, and check out there.
Yeah, I'm gonna be repping it on my show too. I've
yeah,
read two-thirds of your series here. You know how much I love this
series. Yeah, so thank you.
I absolutely love it. It's very unsettling.
It is very good work.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, if you like Event Horizon, maybe you like it.
You'll like this even better.
I already have the poster in my room. You know
there
this.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been used as my background for the show. So.
And other backgrounds.
Yeah.
It's Robbie's tramp stamp, too.
Yeah, you said you wouldn't tell anyone.
I know. I can't keep secrets. I just get so excited about tramp stamps.
Yay, a tramp stamp. He's like, it's a bullseye. It's a bullseye.
Oh, God. Good Lord.
Oh.
All right.
Well, thank you all so much for listening on that note.
Bye.
Live long and prosper, or just don't get sucked into the health verse.
That's right. Just
hey,
keep away.
Keep away from Sam Neill.
Yeah.
Hasta la vista.
You said live long and prosper. That's all you said.
Life
you
finds a way.
Finish that shit.
Life finds a way.
One and all.
One and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Unlimited power.
Tiny, tiny looking space.
Oh my gosh.
Truth.
So I have one last thing to say, but it's not really related to like...
I'm still recording, so say it. It'll be in the outtakes.
Oh, shit. Okay, well...
Vagina.
No, Holly, it was a bit. Aaron was not taking his shirt off. If that's what you had to say, God damn it.
My pants were off.
Not what I had to say? Actually, no. It was just like... I think I've talked to all three of you about how I watch horror movies and how I kind of critiqued them, or I just lose track. I get very distracted.
You kind of talked about it on the episode. So
what?
You talked about it on the episode, so you talked to the internet about it too.
Well, everyone, now
world.
That we all know that I get distracted. So basically there's a scene where the doctor is in the med bay and Justin's on the slab and she's like hearing noises. She kind of like walks across the room and she's like looking through a hatch. Well, not really through. She's at a good distance. And like the lights start to go out.
Right.
And they like slowly go out behind her and she's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And she keeps looking forward and like the time is just going on so long. I'm like, something is going to happen behind her.
Sure.
And then like lights burst and sparks fly behind her and she freaks out and I just laughed out loud.
There were some good sparks scenes where people were falling in slow-mo in this movie.
Well, I feel like most people would have been like, but I was just like in hysterics because I was like, I kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, I mean, horror movies, part of horror movies, is a little predictable.
Yeah.
I guess.
Sure.
I guess.
Talk to me, Robbie.
Okay, I'll talk to you.
Vlad the Impala. Blah, blah, blah.
Aaron. We just got done with
check 1-2.
But you know, you get the key, so you know you're good on that.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me there for a second.
No, she like, said that. See, now this is getting confusing. Nobody knows who's saying to what.
Now I can hear Holly.
Because I'm garbled.
It's garbled.
She sounds better now.
Yeah, she sounds fine.
Okay. Oh, so shall we get sharted?
Yes, sir.